Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to revive our Sanatana occupation or Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal occupation of the living entity. We are now temporarily engaged in different activities, but all of these activities can be purified when we give up these temporary activities and take up sarva-dharmam parityaja, the activities which are prescribed by the Supreme Lord. That is called our pure life. The Supreme Lord in his transcendental abode, which is beyond the spiritual sky, are both Sanatana, as are the living entities, and the combined association of the Supreme Lord and the living entities in the Sanatana abode is the ultimate aim of human life. The Lord is very kind to the living entities because they are his sons. Lord Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Yonishu Aham Bijam Prajapita, I am the father of all. Of course, there are all types of living entities, according to their various karmas. But here the Lord claims that he is the father of all of them. Therefore, the Lord descends to reclaim all of these forgotten, conditioned souls, to call them back to the eternal sky so that the Sanatana living entities may regain their eternal Sanatana positions in eternal association with the Lord. The Lord comes himself in different incarnations, or he sends his confidential servants as sons or his associates or acharyas to reclaim the conditioned souls. Therefore, Sanatana Dharma does not refer to any sectarian process of religion. It is the eternal function of the eternal living entities in relation with the eternal Supreme Lord. Sanatana Dharma refers, as stated previously, to the eternal occupation of the living entity. Sripad Ramanujacharya has explained the word Sanatana as that which has neither beginning nor end. So when we speak of Sanatana Dharma, we must take it for granted on the authority of Sripad Ramanujacharya that it has neither beginning nor end. The English word religion is a little different from Sanatana Dharma. Religion conveys the idea of faith, and faith may change. One may have a faith in a particular process, and he may change his faith and adopt another. But Sanatana Dharma refers to that activity which cannot be changed. For instance, liquidity cannot be taken from water, nor heat taken from fire. Similarly, the eternal function of the eternal living entity cannot be taken from the living entity. Sanatana Dharma is the eternal integral, is eternally integral with the living entity. We have found out what is that eternal function of the living entity. We have to find out what is that eternal function of the eternal living entity. When we speak of Sanatana Dharma, therefore, we must take it for granted on the authority of Sripad Ramanujacharya that it has neither beginning nor end. That which has neither end nor beginning must not be sectarian or limited by boundaries. Those belonging to some non-eternal religious faith will wrongly consider that Sanatana Dharma is also sectarian. But if we go deeply into the matter and consider it in the light of modern science, it is possible for us to see that Sanatana Dharma is the business of all the people of the world, nay, of all the living entities of the universe. Non-Sanatana religious faith may have some beginning in the annals of human history, but there is no beginning to the history of Sanatana Dharma. because it remains eternally with the living entities. Insofar as the living entities are concerned, the authoritative Shastras state that the living entity has neither birth nor death. In the Gita, it is clearly stated that the living entity is never born and he never dies. He is eternal and indestructible, and he continues to live after the destruction of his temporary material body. In reference to the concept of Sanatan Dharma, we must try to understand the concept of religion from the Sanskrit root meaning of the word. Dharma refers to that which is constantly existing with a particular object. We conclude that there is heat and light along with fire. Without heat and light, there is no meaning to the word fire. Similarly, we must discover the essential part of the living being, that part which is his constant companion. That constant companion is his eternal quality, and that eternal quality is his eternal religion. All right, so we're discussing the result of studying the Gita, of understanding the Gita. So it's to be established on this platform, this eternal platform, this Sanatana Dharma. So now we can see for many pages, Prabhupada's going to discuss this element of Sanatana. Why does this need to be discussed so much, the Sanatana element? Because on the material platform, mundane intelligence won't be comfortable with it. Because for those who are materialistic in that they only see matter, then matter is the source of life, source of consciousness. It is the all in all. So you do nicely within matter, you get nice material results. You don't do nicely in matter, you get bad material results. So the whole thing is just how you deal with matter. There's no question of beyond. Right? And those then on the opposite side that accept the gyan aspect of mundane thinking, then they think that all this here is, you know, temporary anyway, it's illusory, and that you'll come to the point of, the annihilation of the existence of the individual soul, and so therefore you'll come to the platform of being happy. Right? So neither of them accept the spiritual world. Right? Because you see, is when people do talk about a spiritual place, then it's either has no form, by those who are the nihilists, or it has a form and it's nice, but it's actually just heaven. It's just a better quality of what's around here. That's all. So neither of them accept the eternal spiritual realm. They may talk about it. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, Eden is descending and all this, but the discussion of it is other than, you know, it has the eternal aspect, but it's not necessarily describing the relation, the eternality of the soul and his what he does. Does that make sense? It's not the, so when it's describing that one will follow a particular process here, but once one has perfected that process and one has gone to this heavenly region, or the heavenly region has descended, whichever works for you, then the problem is then, where is that process anymore? Right? Does that make sense? It's not followed anymore. Right? What is it? I don't know if you know English. The only thing that comes to my mind is the most direct thing. It talks about God consciousness. You know, you have in the Old Testament, it says, you should remember the Lord thy God, the Lord thy God, with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. These words I command thee this day, you should wear as a front lock between thy eyes and a sign upon thy hand. And you should remember the Lord when you walkest by the way, when you liest down, when you risest up. And it should also be there on the door. I don't remember the part about that. So they're basically saying, whatever you're doing at all times, you should be remembering the Lord. But you don't hear that that's the process of the lifestyle in heaven. You understand? Heaven's a reward that then you just enjoy yourself. So God consciousness isn't actually seen as an eternal principle. That's why we're saying it's not actually Sanatana Dharma. Does that make sense? Because that's not what's being described. You do this good, you're nice, then you elevate yourself to that platform, and Hari Bol. You know, that's it. You understand? So that's why then this must be brought out a lot. And also in here is that, what is this Sanatana Dharma that he's talking about? Because he says the faith may change, other things may change. See, the difficulty is because we take Dharma, which means religion, but we translate it as the modern, which is simply faith. Not actually, religion means, Dharma means the inherent nature of something that you can't change. So that would mean is that if God has established the inherent nature, you can't disregard His teachings. Because then you're disregarding the inherent nature of something. And that means it's irreligious. Right? Not in the matter of faith, just even from the matter of science. Right? You have the science and you have faith in that science. That's there. But the point is that it's still a science. So everything has its nature. Right? You have your skin, it has a nature. You can't change the nature. How it deals, what works for the skin, what doesn't work for the skin. You know what I'm saying? Your eyes have a nature. They see. And if they're in certain conditions, they work. Other conditions, they don't work. You're in a pitch black room, they don't see. You're in a place that's light, they can see. You know what I'm saying? So being in a dark condition and then trying to see, that would be the inappropriate situation for the eyes. Does this make sense? So everything has, the finger has a nature. It does certain things. Right? Your foot has a nature. Right? It walks. Right? Unless, of course, you're a monkey, you can also eat with it. But, you know. But other than that, it has a nature. It doesn't change. So that means a human being has a nature. Right? The soul has a nature. All positions in society, they have a nature. A house has a nature. Right? Within the house, your kitchen, there's a nature there. If you can't cook in that room, you can't call it a kitchen. Right? If you can't take a bath, you can't call it a bathroom. You understand? If you can't come in, hang up your coats, you can't, you know, put your shoes, you can't sit down to put your shoes on, it's not called a foyer. You know what I'm saying? If you can't walk through it, it's not called a door. You understand? There's certain things that don't change. So Prabhupada's pointing out here very emphatically that this is not something that changes. This is eternal. So it's non-sectarian. A kitchen's a kitchen, no matter who's using it. Right? Doesn't matter who's using it. Now, according to it, there may be some slight detail, you know, in what's in your kitchen, how the kitchen's set up, different things like that. Devotees worry about, you know, there's a place for where you wash the cooking pots, there's a place for the eating things. Other kitchens don't worry about that. You know, they just worry you'll have nice facility and nice things are there, nice ingredients. Someone may worry about you have counter space. Someone else worries about, you know, whether you're mixing varieties of foodstuffs. You know, that this kind of meat and dairy don't mix. You know, so many different things are there, but the point is the essential point is you can cook there. That's what makes it the kitchen. Does that make sense? So that's the eternal nature. That's why Prabhupada keeps saying it should be, you should look for this. You have to seek that out. Because otherwise, if we just catch the form, you haven't actually understood what's eternal. You know what I'm saying? Form is used as expression, but the point is what are you expressing? You perform the ritual, okay, for what? That's what you have to find. Does this make sense? So this is what's being brought out, this eternal. So Sanatana means it's eternal. So the principle, these principles are eternal. Right. Does that make sense? So it's not, it's, just as we're saying the form is not the important element, but that goes both ways. We can say, yes, it's not important, therefore we don't have to follow the Vedic. But at the same time, since form is not important, you don't have to follow the modern either. Form is form. So what is it that you're trying to achieve? What is the eternal element? That's what you're trying to do. Now, if you can use the natural traditional forms that they use in the spiritual world, why you wouldn't want to use them? Right? Why you wouldn't, as a devotee, why you wouldn't want to use them? But if it's not available, then whatever's the forms that actually accomplish what you're trying to do. Does that make sense? You got to get from point A to point B. So why not use a swan airplane? Now that would be, the residents of Vaikuntha would use that. You know, isn't it better? You don't need petrol. You know, you can fly around. All you have to do is think where you want it to go and it goes there. You don't have to drive it or anything. So you can sit and carry on your conversation and not watch out where you're driving. And the thing will get there. The swan airplane will get there without crashing into anything. Right? So now, wouldn't that be a preferred way of travel? Yes? But if it's not available, then you use something that does the work here. Right? So in other words, not the temple car. So, right? You know, it works. It runs. It's got petrol in it. It actually, you know, moves down the road. Things don't fall off. You know, like I remember we were driving along in the Sankirtan van and, you know, we're driving along and then we notice that there's a tire going out in front of us. It's kind of like, wait a minute, where'd that come from? There's no other cars on the road, you know. So it was one of our tires. You know, like that. So, that makes sense? So you have to see that what is the nature of something, that's what you're having to deal with. Right? So that's actually what the rituals are trying to accomplish. So the situations, the applications, the results, those are according to the inherent nature of what you're dealing with. That comes from Shastra. Right? Other than that, you can speculate, but you see people are speculating and not getting the results. People are speculating about family life. Are they getting results? No. Those people who are getting results, they will quote some tradition. Right? And the people who don't quote tradition, especially if they're opposed to it, they say all kinds of things, but the results they're talking about, they never get. Why? Because they don't know the inherent nature of what is a father, what's a mother, what's a husband, what's a wife, what's a parent, what's a child. They don't know. They speculate. So it won't work. Does that make sense? You know, a social system. What's a community? Community has an inherent nature. That's not understood, then it's not going to work. We work at, oh, you know, everybody can come together and feel comfortable and all this and that. Is that the definition of a community? No, that's the definition of a party, maybe. A social function. A community is, you have a group of individuals who have individually made the same choices in lifestyle, therefore they live together. That's a community. Right? So that would mean everybody in the community should have the same kind of standards, same goals, same way of seeing the community itself. So where does that come from? That comes from education. That comes from association. So we don't find community development that the first thing to discuss is education and association. No, okay, you have a lawn party where everybody cooks for five people and, you know, everybody comes out and nobody ever gets enough to eat, you know, but it doesn't matter because it's only supposed to be a social thing that you talk anyway. So, you know what I'm saying? So, what, you know, okay, and that's called community. You know what I'm saying? If you needed someone to talk to or something to eat, you could do it with much less effort. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is we're not getting to the essence. Unless you get to the essence, how do you know what is actually functioning? So that's the point. Sanatan Dharma means it doesn't change. You can change situations, you can change forms, but the principle of what you're working on, that won't change. Right? So the essential thing is you're remembering Krishna. Right? That's the essential point of Sanatan Dharma. You're always absorbed in God consciousness. Right? And then, since you're absorbed in God consciousness, that God consciousness should be favorable. And if it's favorable, it means it should be done avoiding karma and jnana. Right? And so that means that you have to be performing the activity from the selfless platform to please the Lord. So now, since the Lord is a person, then His pleasure is specific. You know what I'm saying? The mom's going to please the child on the kid's birthday by feeding it whatever the parent wants to feed, right? Steamed broccoli. You know, let's have a whole nice, you know, the central feature of the birthday party is the steamed broccoli. You know, you don't use salt because, you know, low sodium diet and everything like that. And, you know, butter may be bad for your heart for digestion and everything like this and all that. But, you know, we'll decorate it nicely. We'll stack it up really nice. It looks very attractive. So will the kid be happy? No. Will it be a birthday to remember? No. Yeah. But there's a good chance you'll remember it the rest of his life. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, I guess if that's what the mom wanted, then, you know, she got it. But so in other words, pleasing means what the other person appreciates. So that means if we're trying to please God, that means we would do the activity in a way that He would appreciate it. So how He appreciates things is what's written and documented in Scripture. So it's not a speculation. Otherwise, everybody will have their own idea what God likes. That makes sense? So therefore, to make it very clear, God says what He likes in Scripture. So it's not a matter of speculation. Does that make sense? So then, you know, having established that, we need to, you know, accept Bhagavad Gita because this is what God prefers. And then Sanatan, you come to that eternal platform that you're going to be working with this eternal element. Does that make sense? Right? And just as we said before, there's the masculine and feminine principles. There's going to be the principle of what is the element that is pleasing. That's the masculine. And then what is the form that it takes to please? That's the feminine. Right? So the masculine element, that central feature, cannot change because that's the eternal point. Right? That doesn't change. Now, the forms that you use, that's variable. Right? That's the variableness. What form is best to use in that situation? That's time, place, and circumstance. But if you don't catch the essential point, then we can't talk time, place, and circumstance because you haven't actually understood what you're supposed to apply to time, place, and circumstance. Right? Does that make sense? It's time, place, and circumstance. I'm sitting in the kitchen. Now, so what should I do? It depends, right? If it's time for lunch, I'm supposed to cook. What if it's actually time for, you know, Bhagavad Gita class? Are you supposed to be sitting in the kitchen? You know, your head in the refrigerator, checking out what's going on. Any leftovers from yesterday? Like, no, you're supposed to be out of the kitchen. So the time, place, and circumstance at that point is get out of the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? Because you know what your purpose is. You don't know the purpose. You can't actually tell. So you should be able to scientifically say, what is the purpose? What's the field? What are you trying to accomplish? How are you going to accomplish it? Right? That should be able to be explained. If it can't be explained, it's not scientific. Does that make sense? So this is Sanatan Dharma. It's a science. So therefore, it doesn't matter who it is, where it is, what's going on. It always applies. That's Sanatan. Right? And it's Dharma because it's considering the particular nature of everything involved in that particular situation. What is each thing? What's the nature of each one? Then therefore they're going to have to work. You know what I'm saying? Husband and wife. So what's the nature of man? What's the nature of woman? What's the nature of husband? What's the nature of wife? That combination, understanding those four elements, then you can decide what's to be done according to time, place, and circumstance. Otherwise, if you don't know those four things, how are you going to do anything? Right? How are you going to do anything? It's not. It's not going to happen. You can speculate. But the point is, the speculation, I haven't seen it to get anybody very good results. Right? Good results aren't the known medium for this. You know what I'm saying? Because very few people figure it out, right? You can go into a store and, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of self-help books, this, that, and this, that. How many actually talk about the nature of men and women? There's a couple of them only. Right? Because nobody knows. So unless you hear from the scriptures, how are you going to know? Right? And if we go on and say, no, it's not the Vedic, it's this or that. But the modern, what is it getting for us? What great social system is going on that everyone feels, you know, protected and comfortable and secure? Right? I don't see it. Right? Where is it? It's not there. So therefore, we have to turn to what the Lord gives us. Does that make sense? So it's like that in everything. Does that make sense? So that's what is being given by Bhagavad Gita. How to see the eternal element in everything. How its connection with the Supreme Lord. Right? Because that's what makes it eternal. And then whatever is the best form to use to make it function. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why this is being, you know, other things he's gone on for a paragraph or two, but this element of Sanatan, Prabhupada, this is already, so many pages have gone by. Because otherwise, it's a problem. Because we're dealing with the mundane and it ends. Or you deal with karma, it ends. You deal with jnana, and then supposedly there's no end, but then there's no form. Right, so one has form and an end, the other has no form but endless. So we're talking about endless form. Right? So it's a new concept. It's a new concept. Right? So that's why it must be, because then you understand this is what you can get. We're convinced, because unless you're convinced of the goal, you're not going to be inspired to act. Right? Because action happens because of inspiration. Right? There's a need. You have to have that. So you'll act. You don't need it, you won't act. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Dharma refers to that which is constantly existing with a particular object. We conclude that there is heat and light along with fire. Without heat and light, there is no meaning to the word fire. Similarly, we must discover the essential part of the living being, that part which is his constant companion. That constant companion is his eternal quality, and that eternal quality is his eternal religion. Okay, so what's always with the living entity, that's the eternal quality. And that's his religion, right? So if you take Sat Chit Ananda, so eternality, knowledge, and bliss, right? So that knowledge is in the position of activity. So that means eternally, with appropriate knowledge, he performs activities that actually make him happy, right? And what actually makes him happy? That's serving the Lord. Because as a leaf on the tree, one is happy by serving the root. So that's what has to be looked for. When Sanatana Goswami asked Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the swarup of every living being, The Lord replied that the sarup, or constitutional position of the living being, is the rendering of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we analyze this statement of Lord Chaitanya's, we can easily see that every living being is constantly engaged in rendering service to another living being. A living being serves other living beings in various capacities. By doing so, the living entity enjoys life. Lower animals serve human beings as servants serve their master. A serves B. A serves B master, B serves C master, and C serves D master, and so on. Under these circumstances, we can see that one friend serves another friend. The mother serves the son. The wife serves the husband. The husband serves the wife, and so on. If we go on searching in the spirit, it will be seen that there is no exception in the society of living beings to the activity of service. The politician presents his manifesto before the public to convince them of his capacity to serve. The voters therefore give the politician their valuable votes, thinking that he will render service to society. The shopkeeper serves the customer, and the artisan serves the capitalist. The capitalist serves the family, and the family serves the state in terms of the eternal capacity of the living, eternal living being. In this way, we can see that no living being is exempt from rendering service to other living beings. And therefore, we can safely conclude that service is the constant companion of the living being, and that the rendering of service is the rendering of service by the living entity is the eternal religion of the living being. Okay, so then he's taking here as the constant companion is service. Therefore, that rendering of service, that's eternal religion. Right? So we're not saying that it's of any particular thing. It's just that's what the living entity does. That's the eternal nature. He renders service. That's what he can do. Right? So now, to establish oneself, therefore, what is eternal service? What will last eternally? Right? So only something in connection with the Lord will last eternally. Right. So unless you're rendering service in connection with the Lord, then it's not eternal. It's not sanatana. So one has to see is whatever service one's situated in, that service therefore is connected to the Lord. Then that becomes perfection. Right. What are you finding in music? Just when you figured out how to be the Lord of all you survey, then they drop this one on you. Right? Okay. Okay. Does this make sense? So service is the principle, not the controller and enjoyer. Right? God's the controller and enjoyer. We're the servants. That's what we are. That is our eternal nature, our constitutional nature. Because here is that he's pointed out is that Lord Chaitanya has been asked, therefore, what is his sarup? Right? So when we hear, okay, what's the sarup of the living entity? What's somebody generally going to start talking about? Right?
Which rasa?
Yeah, which rasa, what form they would be, and this and that. But what is that based on? Yes, servant, right? So service is the actual point. These are ways of rendering service. So that means the thing that won't change is service. That's the meaning of the Vedic culture. What is that point that always remains? Right? It doesn't matter which rasa one's in, the essential point is service. If that's seen, one has no problem with the different rasas. If you only see the rasas, then you're going to have a problem. So therefore, then one only wants to read about this rasa or like that. Right? But someone who understands service has no problem hearing any rasa. Right? Like the gopis, they're happy to hear about any rasa. Right? They're happy. It's not a matter of that. There's a point if it's in relationship to Krishna, they're happy to hear about it. Because the point is they have their point of view. They have their perspective, how they're going to interpret that anyway. Right? Krishna is being tied up with a rope by Mother Yashoda. Okay? So that's the pastime. So now you can say, oh, well, that's a parental Ross pastime. I'm not so interested. But the point is, that would mean you're not actually seeing the element of service. Right? Because that's the common element. So this is service being rendered. If your value is service rendered to Krishna, therefore, if others are rendering service to Krishna, you're happy to hear about it. Does that make sense? Because service is the main principle, and that's service to Krishna. That's the eternal principle. Right? Yes.
I was laughing at when in LA some time ago when people were bringing peacocks and
gopis. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they do all kinds of interesting things like that. Like, gopis as if they're working at it on their own, but if they come to the Babaji's, they'll end up as peacocks, because Westerners can never be gopis because they're from the West. You know, all purely bodily consciousness, but, you know, they got it worked out.
Sri Prabhupada was laughing. You mean our men are wearing dresses?
Like that, yeah. You have that, after, in the evening, I think after we finish the six systems and we do the Apasampradayas. So you have the, what are they called? Something, I can't remember what they're called. Shaki Bakis, like that. So they wear saris and all, but they got beards and all that. But, you know, they got the pearl hanging from the nose. And I've seen them actually. They're really far out. You know, they got, you know, some beard and all that. So, you know, behind you go in and you see the artik, and you see from behind, you see a sari and artiks, so you think it's, and they'll move, try to move like ladies and all that. But then when they turn around, then, you know, you've got this beard. It's got like that doesn't quite look right. So, yeah. So, then the point is now, okay, this pastime, the Damodar Leela, now how does a cowherd boy look at it? It's his friend that's doing that. And it's his friend's mother. So it's a pastime between his friend and his friend's mother. You understand? They're in parental Ras. Then they'll see Mother Yashoda as a mother, how she's dealing with their son. Right? And if it's a gopi, they'll see this is their boyfriend, and, you know, their mother's, you know, chasing him around with a stick, you know? You understand? So it's not a problem, because each one sees Krishna according to their rasa anyway. You understand? So this whole idea is, oh, I only hear this or only hear that. Then that's why Prabhupada says that's for sahajiyas, because they are not actually understanding the principle of service. They think it's a rasa for my own enjoyment. I will enjoy being in this rasa. So it's not about service to Krishna. It's just that you've found a higher platform, you know, to get your happiness from. That's all. Does that make sense? So it's not actually a very elevated. It's not Braj, you know. It means you're doing what you want in connection to Krishna. Right? So it's not actually, you know, what Rupa Goswami defines as the correct platform of devotional service. No, because it has to be favorable to Krishna. But here it's favorable to yourself. If it's favorable to Krishna, it'll automatically be favorable to yourself, because Krishna understands the nature of everything. So his interaction with the living entity is going to be considering the living entity. Right? Does that make sense? Him in the masculine position, he's going to interact with the feminine position according to the feminine position's nature. Right? So that means is how Krishna interacts with the living entity is what is good for the living entity. Right? So it's already worked out what's good for us. But so if we oppose that, then we're not necessarily going to get very much out of it. Right? We're not going to get. Not going to get very much. Yet man professes to belong to a particular type of faith with reference to a particular time and circumstances of birth, and thus claims to be a Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, or an adherent of any other sect or subsect. Such designations are non-Sanatana Dharma. A Hindu may change his faith to become a Muslim, or a Muslim may change his faith to become a Hindu, or a Christian may change his faith, and so on. But in all circumstances, the change of religious faith does not affect or does not allow a person to change his eternal occupation of rendering service to others. The Hindu, Muslim, or Christian in all circumstances is a servant of someone. Thus, to profess a particular type of faith is not to profess one's Sanatana Dharma. The constant companion of the living entity, rendering of service, is Sanatana Dharma. Factually, we are related to the Lord in service. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Enjoyer. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Enjoyer, and we living entities are eternally His servitors. We are created for His enjoyment, and if we participate in that eternal enjoyment with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we become happy. We cannot become happy otherwise. It is not possible to be happy independently, just as no one part of the body can be happy without cooperating with the stomach. It is not possible for the living entity to be happy without rendering transcendental loving service unto the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, worship of different demigods is not approved. It is stated in the 7th chapter, 20th verse, Kamaistaister ritagyana prapadyante nyadevataha tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyatas soya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto the demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their natures, their own natures. So even here, they'll worship the demigods according to their own interest. Right? Not specifically. That it means the ritual will be correct, but how they're viewing it, what is their mood in doing it, then that will all be very tight. So this is there's still more. Okay. Here it is plainly said that those who are directed by lust worship the demigods and not the Supreme Lord Krishna. When we mention the name Krishna, we do not refer to any sectarian name. Krishna means the highest pleasure. And it is confirmed that the Supreme Lord is the reservoir or storehouse of all pleasure. We are all hankering after pleasure. Ananda Mayobhyasata, Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12. The living entities, like the Lord, are full of consciousness, and they are after happiness. The Lord is perpetually happy, and if the living entities associate with the Lord, cooperate with Him, and take part in His association, then they also become happy. So this is an important point to bring out, this anandamayo bhyasata, because the living entity is trying to be happy. So that's the thing. He wants to be happy on the material platform. He worships the demigods according to his own nature, right? Because it's still, he's trying to be happy himself. So here, then we're saying is that one should worship Krishna. And it's a sectarian name, because some will say, oh, that's your God. It means, Krishna means the highest pleasure. So, why would that be an important name to bring to the front? Right? The importance is going to be because the living entity on the platform of this Ananda Maya then is situated in a situation where he's not on the material platform. He's beyond the material platform, so he's going to be very happy. Right? But the problem is unless he understands Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, then how is he going to come to his full potential? unless he takes shelter of the internal potency. Right? Because taking shelter of the internal potency means that you are serving, engaging this service, this nature of service in the Lord's service. Right? That's the spiritual realm. Okay? Because otherwise, in between, there is Anandamaya. But this Anandamaya is not that great. It's not a reservoir. It's just an experience of your tiny little fractional part of being eternal. Okay? So that means he's out of the material, not into the spiritual. What is that position? Brahmajyoti. But in if we're talking about energies, tathasta. That's the tathasta position. Is one is able to taste the happiness of Brahman understanding. The eternality. You can taste that. That's the ananda that you taste. But the point is where is that ananda coming from? Where are we coming from? Right? We're coming from the Lord. So that means is that whatever happiness we have is a fraction of what is there in Krishna. Right? Eternally separated, eternally there. But it means we're coming from the ocean of happiness. Right? So Krishna then is the supreme happiness here. Right? The highest pleasure. Because that he is the source of all pleasure. He is the source of all ananda. Right? So if we're in connection with him, then we will be unlimitedly happy. And how do we connect with him? Right? He's eternal. We're eternal. So how do you connect? What's the connection between two living entities? Service. Right? That's been established. Abhideya means service. You have Sambandha, the masculine principle. You have Prayojana, the feminine principle. How do they connect? Abhideya, service. You understand? So, we're going to taste this unlimited happiness if we serve Krishna. Otherwise, we're just going to have limited happiness. Right? And since the living entity has to be situated either in the spiritual world or the material world, so being situated in Brahman actually isn't an option. Right? One can temporarily be there because that's the jiva has to render service. You can't render service from the neutral platform. Right? You render service in activity. So that means either in the spiritual or in the material. Right? Does that make sense? So living entity has to do one or the other. So we've made our choice. So now if we want to change that position, we have to change our choice. So now we have to see is that spiritual world means applying that service principle to the Supreme Lord. Right? And material means taking that element of service and applying that to ourselves. We're still going to get whatever we want through service. But it's our happiness we're trying to get. And so how big is our happiness? Especially when it's covered by the material energy. It becomes reduced quite greatly. Right? But if it's in connection with Krishna, then where's the limitation? There is no limitation. Does that make sense? If you think about it, much of happiness in this world is not directly experienced by us. But at the same time, we still experience happiness. Does that make sense? That means one of your major industries in the world is entertainment. How does entertainment work? You experience what someone else is experiencing. You understand?
Vicariously.
Yeah, you vicariously. Means that's how, that is the nature of enjoyment of the living entity. It means you have happiness yourself, but you can enjoy something that would not be part of your life. Right? How often are you the great hero that, you know, jumped over 30 stories of buildings and saved, you know, this and that and blew up this and that? And how often? No, but you still get the happiness of watching that. You understand? So that means you connect yourself with superior natures. You can experience that superior nature by assisting it. Does that make sense? So, when Krishna and his devotees are interacting in their pastimes, they are superior living entities. But if we serve in those pastimes, we can taste what they taste. You understand? So, that's the point. That's why service must be seen. That's the element of Sanatana Dharma. You're trying to establish the service nature of the living entity and then direct that towards the Supreme Lord. It's like he's conscious, direct that at the Supreme Lord. He renders service, direct that at the Supreme Lord. Right? You want to be happy, direct that at the Supreme Lord. Does this make sense? Okay, so that's...
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jayanatai Gaur Nimanandi.